city. Flickering dirty neon over alleys mean and dirty streets, while my neighborhood is torn down around me.
Monday Night Love at the End of the World. It is the 15th of September in the year 2013. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. Now, we are now well into the fourth year of the Lifeboat Hour here on the Progressive Radio Network. We're growing, and that's good, but tonight's a night to get really real about a lot of things. It's 10 a.m. in Tokyo, Japan tonight, and at 3 p.m. Today, Monday, which will be their day, the eye of Tropical Storm Typhoon Manyi, M-A-N-Y-I, will pass directly over Fukushima, Japan. Currently, the typhoon is carrying sustained winds of 90 miles an hour, sustained gusts and winds of 90 miles an hour, torrential heavy rainfall. It appears to be a slow mover. It's going to move that distance between Tokyo and Fukushima in about 5 hours. The eye, which is actually a little south of Tokyo right now, and it's already brought damage to Fukushima, and it is a situation which is grave, to say the least, as I've been noting all day that news outlets around the world, from Russia to New Zealand and in Japan, are acknowledging that this is a this is an oh-shit moment, because a lot of bad things are going to happen at Fukushima. We don't know all of what they are, but all of this happens and comes in context with horrendous, and an overused word, but I think appropriate, biblical flooding in nearby to where I am in Boulder, Colorado. It's about 2 hours north of me, which has been devastating. To put that in perspective, because what we learned from Boulder has direct application and implications for Fukushima. I got an email shortly before the show from our good friend Carolyn Baker, who will be back with us soon. The official rainfall totals for last week, from Monday through Friday, were 18.5 inches in Boulder. The average annual rainfall is 11 inches in 1 year. This was a slow, lingering park system, and apparently there are warnings coming out that more rainfall is headed to the way of Boulder County, where big fronts kind of move slowly due to a weakened jet stream park and dump torrential amounts of rain. We saw that earlier this year in North Carolina, which was Asheville and all those regions received 2-3 times the normal annual rainfall, have received so far, but they've received the same kind of rains causing the same kind of devastating flooding. And what I want to do tonight as we deal with this, as we look this situation in the eye, which is enormously dire, is to walk you through my day today on Facebook, which is how information came into me throughout the day. Very, very revealing stuff, and I want to thank all of my Facebook friends who are such incredible contributors. I have eyes and ears around the world, and the rate at which we are finding and sharing information is truly amazing. If you want to see what we've been doing there, go to Facebook and look for Michael C. Rupert, my personal page, not the public figure, and you will see how the information has been coming in and how we have been networking around the world. That's truly gratifying, as much as everything else is truly terrifying. This morning, the first thing I did over coffee was to watch a 19.5-minute film clip of aerial footage of a reconnaissance aircraft being used to survey all of the flood damage in Boulder County. And I would encourage you to do that. This is not something where one or two roads are wiped out. This is, in this footage, I saw almost no road that wasn't wiped out in multiple places. The damage is absolutely devastating in the Boulder area region, and my friends in Boulder is home to the largest number of climate scientists in the world, and so many awake and aware people helping to participate in the change of consciousness, who now are faced with tasks like finding a place to eat, a place to sleep, a place to dry out, a place to go to the bathroom, some food and some fresh water. many of whom are still stranded. Over 500 people unaccounted for still in the Boulder area due to this flooding. And I would, you know, go watch that clip, because words don't express, as you appreciate the fury of what Mother Earth is doing. And tonight as we speak also, by the way, Kit Carolyn Baker is fine. She's in a pretty safe area. She's drying out. But again, I note that just as we went to air, that more reports were coming in, that more rainfall and even snow was predicted in the area overnight tonight. This is far from over for the people in Boulder, and this is a harbinger, if you will, for Fukushima. The roads, the riverbanks, could not withstand that amount of water, which plants one question in mind right away, because all of the earth at Fukushima has been inundated by water for 2.5 years. It's already saturated. The geology is different, worse, more dangerous in a way. But one does not have to be a geologist to wonder what 8, 10, 12 inches of rain plus a storm surge. And the storm surge from the typhoon or tropical storm, whatever it is, when it strikes the area, will be coming directly on shore and constitute a giant backflush through the water that has been draining through the reactors. God knows what will follow from that, assuming the structures stay intact. After I watched that video of Boulder, Colorado, and was just struck speechless almost by the amount and prevalence of the damage, Red Wagner, one of my Facebook friends, posted from Earth First Journal a story which should remind all of us, of those of us who have been tracking storms since Katrina or before. Earth First published, Colorado floods causing fracking spills, natural and human-made disasters portend future of toxic catastrophe. And there are a series of photographs in this link that's on the Earth First news page. That's earthfirstjournal.org. You can also find the story on my Facebook page showing fracking, and there are hundreds of fracking wells. And they have all apparently disgorged all of their toxic chemicals into the flood runoff. There's one picture of a well site where a storage tank is tilted sideways and underwater. Their first paragraph said, "It appears that an unknown number of underwater frack wells are leaking into the floodwaters tearing through Colorado. Although local activists have sent emails with photographs documenting toppled industrial tanks, there has been no response from media or authorities. According to one activist, quote, there has been no mention of the gas wells on the Denver newscast either last night or this evening, although all stations have had extensive and extended flood coverage. You can see underwater wells in the background of some of the newscast videos, and yet the reporters say absolutely nothing." And we did see with Katrina and with Sandy and all the others that there was a huge outpouring of toxic effluents as a result of floods and runoffs, and there are literally hundreds of fracking wells in that area. God knows what they're doing. In addition to roads that no one can navigate, they're still airlifting the guard and emergency services to reach as many people who are cut off and stranded as possible. So that was very, very sobering this morning. But then the stories started to come in from Japan. Now, it was 3 or 4 days ago when one of my Facebook friends pointed to Manji when it was still out in the Pacific and approaching Japan, and it showed a course directly for Honshu, the main island, but also for Fukushima, and I started tracking it right away. I've had a lot of experience, and unfortunately that hasn't changed. And I started warning people then. But right after I was watching and hearing this stuff about Boulder, the story started to flood in from from Japan. And then came a story from the Japan Times. And I wrote, "If you are psychologically and emotionally able, first watch all the aerial footage of the flooding around Boulder. Then read this quote from this posting about Manji." This is from the Japan Times. Quote, "Manji might also inundate Fukushima, where utility crews are struggling to contain highly radioactive water leaking from and flowing under the crippled Fukushima No. 1 nuclear power plant and into the Pacific Ocean at an estimated rate of 300 tons a day. close quote, Japan Times. Now, understand that Fukushima has already been horribly compromised by flooding 2.5 years straight. The reactor buildings are unstable and ready to fall. They're on mud. We've heard Arne Gundersen talk about it. We had Helen Caldicott on the show talking about it. It's common knowledge for those of us who have been following it. That ground is already super saturated and has no place to go except into the ocean. The unwelded storage tanks are already failing, and the spent fuel pools are teetering above ground with an ever-present threat of an open-air, uncontrolled fission reaction. Now add to rainfall like what has just hit Boulder instead of many huge sections of roadway, bridges, and buildings falling away into the torrent. Picture the reactor buildings, the fuel pools, and all the stored super radioactive water being washed away either into the sea or being scattered and dispersed for hundreds, maybe thousands of miles by 50, 60, 70. That's what the winds were. They're 90 now, 90-mile-per-hour winds. And the hardest thing of all to imagine is the fuel pools collapsing in the middle of a tropical storm, triggering an open-air reaction in the middle of all that wind and rain, which will scatter the radiation instantly all over East Asia. Forget all the other times you've heard the cliche, the perfect storm. This puts them all to shame. That was the Japan Times. Now, as the day progressed, it was about 6 hours ago now, Energy News posted a story which went up immediately on the website. The whole reactor sits on sodden ground, which has now become unstable, muddy, and possibly liquefied. The site itself experiences many minor earthquakes each day, but should a quake greater than 6 or 7 on the Richter scale occur, it is likely that one of several buildings could collapse with absolutely disastrous consequences. This was further confirmation that three cores had melted through China syndrome down into the earth. They are unaccounted for. But those cores have been kept from reaching critical mass and triggering a hydrogen explosion because of the flowing water that's been coming down the mountainside over them. Now, if all of that land sinks into the Pacific Ocean, just like in Malibu, I've seen so many times in my life from having lived all those years in California, then what will happen will be that the water flows reaching down to wherever the cores are will likely be interrupted. That will trap the cores with a certain amount of water below ground, and that water will superheat and break down into its constituent elements of hydrogen and oxygen, which, by the way, when they're liquefied, that's what rocket fuel is, and you will get a hydrogen explosion. This is not being lost on the rest of the world. One more, and Typhoon Manji hits Japan. Channel News Asia came up about an hour after that, with a distinct warning. The quote from Channel News Asia was, Typhoon Manji hit southern Japan on Monday, bringing heavy rains as officials warned of floods and strong winds amid fears the storm could go on to hit the crippled Fukushima nuclear power plant. And that is exactly what it appears to be doing, because as of about an hour ago, the last track, or an hour and a half ago, the last track that I found shows the eye headed directly for Fukushima from the south with a counterclockwise rotation, which will bring the storm surge directly onto the beach, and that's just going to mess up everything. So now it's time for a first song. We got three songs tonight, and I'm going to leave you with one that's going to lift you up, I promise, I swear. But there are three songs tonight because the music seems to fit with a situation that is so profound and so deep. First song I wanted to play tonight, had to play tonight, and the lyrics actually do kind of fit, is a song by Fleetwood Mac, Stevie Nicks, and Lindsey Buckingham called Landslide. Here it is.
This is for you, Daddy. I took my love and I took it down. Climbed a mountain and I turned around, and I saw my reflection in the snow-covered hills, till the landslide brought me down. Oh, mirror in the sky, what is love? Can the child within this love, take it down. Oh, if you climb a mountain and you turn around, if you see my reflection in the snow-covered hills, well, the landslide will bring it down, down. And if you see my reflection in the snow-covered hills, well, maybe the landslide will bring it down. Well, the landslide will bring it down.
Thank you, Lindsey Buckingham, and thank you, Stevie Nicks. That's a good one, and it puts us in a hard space, connects us with everything. We're going to make progress through with the music. Before we go to break, let me continue with how the news stories unfolded today, because there's an amazing poetry to that. About four and a half hours ago, as the stories were piling in, there was a story from Russia Today, RT. And the headline of the story, Endless Fukushima Catastrophe, 2020 Olympics Under Contamination Threat. But that's going to bring up a very, very profound point here in a second. But there was a quote in that story. This quote asked the biggest and most important question of all, and I've concluded that those in control know that the situation at Fukushima is hopeless, beyond control. It's going to show itself very, very soon, like right now, if not sooner. And I totally believe that all they're trying to do is to avoid panic. The IOC understood what was happening at Fukushima. Shinzo Abe understood what was going on. The press all understood what's going on. The only motive that I can conclude from all the years that I have been doing this work, from my time in law enforcement around intelligence, is that all the press has been trying to do is to avoid a panic. They know what's coming at Fukushima, and there is no way to stop it. No effort is being made to prevent something which now appears to be both inevitable and imminent, a done deal. Now, here's the quote from Russia Today's story, which is, again, on my Facebook page that came up today. Buildings 1, 2, and 3, quote, if one of these buildings collapses, the targeted flow of cooling water to the pools and cores would cease. The cores would become red hot and possibly ignite, releasing massive amounts of radiation into the air and water. Picture that being released into a typhoon with 90-mile-an-hour winds spreading all over Japan. The air and water and the fuel in the cooling pools could ignite. It is strange that neither the U.S. government in particular nor the global community seem to be concerned about these imminent possibilities and exhibit no urge to avert catastrophe. Russia Today, they've been doing amazing journalism. Those are obvious questions, and if you've been following me for all these years or since Fukushima, certainly you know that I have been pointing to these issues over and over and over again. And now we have to come to the point where we really kind of understand that we have been abandoned by mainstream media and government, that the situation is indeed life and death for the whole world. I mean, now within a matter of hours, if one of those buildings go down. So, as I was posting this, and the amazingly loving, intelligent comments were coming in from all of my Facebook friends, and also with amazing data, people scouring all over the world and bringing the pick of the litter, which goes up on my page. So I have a real-life almost CIA with eyes and ears around the world. That's what I've been doing for a while anyway. And the news was progressively more sobering, and the comments got progressively deeper and more loving and more aware and more, as Carolyn Baker might say, surrendered to the situation but not resigned to hopelessness. It is apparently it's obviously clear what's going on now. And I watched, and I'm experiencing still throughout the day today, a great feeling of love within myself and a great feeling of connectedness to all of you listening tonight and who will be listening throughout the week, to all of you on Facebook, to every living thing And I'm going to look for a quote here. One of my friends, Michael Mantis, who is a great writer. God, I hope I put this in my notes somewhere. He was inspired by Carlos Castaneda. He asked, yes, okay. He asked, what would you do if you were already dead, had nothing to fear, nothing to lose, no one to impress? Do that. And I just said, yes, that's it. And I said, what, you know, if it were me, I would sink into a state of loving everything and realizing that it always has been connected to me and I always to it. There is only one. There is only one connected thing. And that led me, as I was witnessing so much courage in the face of so much sorrow, as I was witnessing so much spirit in the face of what could arguably be mankind's last hours on this planet, but also our greatest challenge in the moment at which we rise to and find our highest selves. I've been thinking all week, before there was reggae and before all of that, there was a place, and you got to be old enough to remember, where one could always go to get happy, and it always worked. And if you didn't want to get happy, there was a place where always your tears could flow and you could be connected. And that was Motown. Originally a label belonging to Berry Gordy, Motown came up during the Vietnam War. It was characteristically beautiful, wonderful black African music. And it united everybody. I remember being a kid in high school, and all the race riots would stop when the Four Tops or the Miracles came on, or, you know, and that Motown kicked in, and everybody would just dance and laugh. But sometimes the songs are sad. They open your heart. And I'm going to leave you with a real happy one, so just hang on for that and trust me. But there are two Motown songs I'm going to play tonight, and the first one is a song that Joan Osborne sings. She's white, and I think it's so beautiful and poetic that a white woman was honored in a movie called Standing in the Shadows of Motown to perform one of the greatest Motown classics of all time, and a song which just breaks my heart, which is good because it opens the heart, because the heart has to be open before the joy and the love can come in. This is also, from a vocalist standpoint, this is Joan Osborne climbing Mount Everest in her hiking shorts, jogging directly up to the top, an amazing vocal performance, which can sit with all of us now. It's called What Becomes of the Brokenhearted. Here we go.
I started out singing. I used to sing in this little blues bar in New York called Dan Lynch, and they had this amazing jukebox. And I would go over there pretty much every night after I played, and I would play that song, What Becomes of the Broken Heart.
I feel as though that the Broken Heart is a song that could really live again.
Well, this will be the audition today, and see if we can...
No, it won't be an audition. You've already passed the test.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it'll get an opportunity to see if you really like it after we give me this plan.
Right.
To see if we still have it.
Lane. dreams of the broken heart and tell me. What a mess we left you. What a mess we left you. Against the odds and other gods, we left you such a mess.
Posting on tea and champagne. Up and left, but a dry stain. Camped by the fire in formula time. Under the change of the changing world.
Left you.
This is not tomorrow.
Weird kind of sense.
Today is not a drill.
Makes a weird kind of sense.
Yesterday needs no warning. And the prophecies fulfilled.
That's a track from New White Trash's first album, Double Wide, which you can find on the website newwhitetrash.com. Got the lyrics of some of the songs. That song's now about 3.5 years old. And it was me singing lead on that, and the lyrics kind of fit. Oh, what a mess we left you, yeah. And yesterday heeds no warning. And here we are. So continuing with the evolution of the news throughout the day today and the consciousness around it. Short time after the Fox News story, Agence France-Presse, you can see that the world was picking up on the threats to Fukushima from Tropical Storm Manji. Agence France-Presse wrote, Typhoon Manji hit southern Japan Monday, bringing heavy rains. As official warned of floods and strong winds amid fears the storm could go on to hit the crippled Fukushima plant, which it is apparently going to do and already caused damage. Now, this was building up, and it was right around then that my friend Michael Modis put that great quote up, or just asked the question. It was his words, what would you do if you're already dead? Had nothing to fear, nothing to lose, no one to impress. Whatever it is, do that, and I totally agree. Then it got a little deeper. There is a link up on my Facebook page for Boulder Flood Relief, by the way, for all of those of you who are able or in a position to give assistance to a horribly devastated Boulder County. That website is boulderfloodrelief.org, boulderfloodrelief, one word, .org. Get help and get involved. They are going to need some help there, especially with more rain, possibly even snow coming tonight. Typhoon hits Japan, fears for Fukushima plant. This is now four hours ago. It's in the headlines of the New Zealand Herald as the world was waking up and suddenly coming out of their abject denial about the precariousness, the danger of the situation that was already there. Typhoon hits Japan, fears for Fukushima plant. World New Zealand Herald News, and that story just went straight to the point that everybody in the world needs to be scared right now, especially if Building 4 or Building 3 falls, or if there's a huge tidal surge overwhelming the ability of the already rickety, precarious cooling apparatus water flow situation. I mean, this is just deadly, but it was a short time after that, unfortunately, that the first reports of damage came in, Well, let me stay with the sequence here. Is there a media blackout on the fracking flood disaster in Colorado? A website, TexasSharon.com, started picking up on reports of a number of fracking wells in Boulder County having given up their poisonous contents. My friend Tim, Facebook friend Tim Nolan, great guy, he just received an email from his brother who lives in Evergreen. Phone, internet comes and goes. Be patient. First time in 2 days. Anything has worked. 500 people still missing in Boulder as we try now to connect this with what's happening in Fukushima. And then, there is a story. The first reported damage came from Fukushima, which I'm building to as soon as I find it in sequence here. But the storm isn't anywhere near close to that, and we will get to that in a second. Weather Underground picked up on the story about 3 hours ago and posted a good tracking map, which we put up, and it was very clear that this storm was making a beeline. I mean, like it was on a laser homing device to have the eye pass over Fukushima. Doesn't look like it's weakening much as it passes over Tokyo, but even still, it's a major tropical storm moving, I would say, fairly slowly. That's going to dump torrential rains with 60, 70, 80. The winds are now currently 90 miles an hour, sustained gusts. And the next 12 hours will tell the tale, as now the world has really started to pay attention to Mani. Here are the first reports of typhoon damage of Fukushima, which came in 3 hours ago when the storm was still south of Tokyo. The typhoon is still passing overhead and will not pass over into the ocean for about 12 hours. Expected strike of the eye of the storm with Fukushima itself is expected at 3 p.m. Japan time, which is in about 9 hours, or less than that. Excuse me. It was 10 o'clock in the morning when we started the show, so they had 5 hours to go. So let's assume we got 4.5 hours before, and the winds are getting stronger. Fukushima, this is from Fukushima Diary, who has been doing amazing work steadily, day in and day out. And they reported, which we picked up 3 hours ago, a tanked area dam overflowed due to the typhoon rain. According to TEPCO, the local dam of a tank area overflowed due to the rain related to typhoon around 1300 as of 9:15. That was 1 o'clock. So that was in the early parts of the rain when this tank overflowed just due to the rain from a storm that was still far away. The Fukushima Diary says the tank area is located closer to the Pacific than the tank area that experienced 300 cubic meters of leakage. TEPCO was preparing to clear the dam before it overflows with the typhoon, but, quote, they were actually too late. The radioactivity density in the overflowed water is still under analysis. Underlined from Fukushima Diary, contaminated water problem is literally overflowing due to the typhoon-related rain. That was many hours ago before the storm even started to get close. As this continued throughout the day, at 5:13 p.m. Eastern Time, and so we are now at 9:44 Eastern Time, the full storm has not yet arrived yet, and the wind speeds are higher than anticipated. Energy News posted a story, fears for Fukushima plant as typhoon only hours away. Officials warn of floods and strong winds. This is from Energy News, which was published today. I'm waiting for it to load so I can read you a little bit more of it. And it's loading very, very slowly. Okay, here we go. Storms gusting over 150 kilometers an hour, workers frantically pumping up water, torrential rain to force more contamination into groundwater. Very detailed tracking, very detailed. So clearly the world has been waking up to the fact that this is not a pass the popcorn moment anymore. This is a hold your breath moment. So as we rolled up to the show tonight, I have continued to track the storm. The latest posting map I have is up on the Facebook, shows that at around 3 p.m. Japanese time, the storm will be there with a storm surge flowing directly onshore. Now to go back and just look at the situation that we know exists there, we know that's liquefied mud there that is not stable, that has already been handling more water than it can possibly handle for 2.5 years, that's about to get an unknown amount of water dumped on it. I, for one, now this is a slightly different situation in that Fukushima itself is kind of like a dustpan. Picture a dustpan emptying out into the Pacific Ocean. With all of the flow coming from the mountains and coming from literally the west to the east, heading toward the Pacific Ocean. And it's just like in Malibu, if you've ever been to or seen any of the big landslides in Malibu, California, that soil, that earth has no place to go but down. And we are talking chunks of soil that will take whole buildings and structure with them, but will do unbelievable, incalculable damage to the water flows underneath the reactors, any ability to cool the cores. But there are also 1,100 or 1,200 storage tanks above ground which have already developed multiple leaks because TEPCO didn't want to spend the money to have the tanks welded, and they're already, as Arne Gundersen had said, not seismically qualified. And those kinds of winds and those kinds of rains are going to produce movements in the earth. And so we can anticipate any number of things going south and all at once. And what you have to remember is that if the fuel pools at 4 go, or the fuel pools at 3 go, or if they lose control of cooling the three cores that are underground somewhere and they superheat, or if all the tanks go, holding that enormously concentrated radioactive water, the whole site will become unapproachable, therefore everything there goes. We are fortunate in that yesterday or the day before, Japan shut down its last operating nuclear reactor. But we are left in a place now where we understand that it's all of us. And as I compare Boulder and as I compare Fukushima, I do fall back on what my friend Carolyn Baker wrote and my own work. Surrender is not giving in. Surrender is totally accepting to the fact that there is something horrible that's coming and it's going to happen, and it cannot be postponed. It cannot be evaded. It's here upon us now. And, I so wanted at the very first part of this week to celebrate the enormous victory that happened as we prevented just Tuesday Barack Obama from attacking Syria and starting World War III. And I have to offer a deep bit of gratitude to Representative Alan Grayson of Florida, it doesn't matter what party he's with, he's sane, who stood in total opposition to this for a long time and marshaled an enormous amount of support from around the world to force the United States government to do something it has never done, to back down from a war it had already declared it was going to fight. And this summation from Congressman Grayson was a perfect description. On August 27th, the headlines were Syria crisis, UK and US finalized plan for military strikes, The Guardian. On August 27th, Syria strikes due in days, West tells opposition sources, Reuters, August 27th. Strike against Syria is imminent, Reuters, August 27th. Obama will bomb Syria, Politico, August 26th. US military ready to attack Syria, Hagel says, August 27th. And here are the headlines now today. September 10th, Obama to explore diplomatic route on Syria, U.S. to work through U.N. on Syria arms proposal. Obama agrees to U.N. discussion of putting Syria chemical weapons under international control, Associated Press, September 10. Syria will sign a chemical weapons convention, Reuters, September 10th. This was an amazing feat, and it was not done. And I have to tip my hat to move on and code pink, all those who I've lambasted for failing before, because what I had said clearly was it doesn't matter what weapon you're firing, fire it. Whatever it is you got, you fire it now, because it's the number of people. And clearly, and Congressman Grayson agrees, and I know because I was a part of it, we were part of it here on Facebook, the whole world rose up. 7 billion of us, or most of us, made it clear by whatever means that we had available that we could say no. And what did we find? We had power. And I was so amazed during the course of the whole evolution of the Syria non-attack, attack, build-up at the defeatism, which I was hearing, especially in the voices of younger people, say, what's the point? We can't do anything. They're going to do whatever they want to do. They're going to attack. And I was screaming, no, you cannot say that, because you will die if that's the case. We will all die if that's the case. And we can't afford that kind of defeatism and surrender. That's resignation. That's not surrender. Because we have shown, and this may be a totally bittersweet Shakespearean ending, because here with this crisis in Fukushima lingering over us, and climate control, obviously, climate collapse totally out of control and threatening all of us and our lives, it's a bittersweet pill to discover that maybe we did and have had the power all along, kind of like a tragedy, a Shakespearean tragedy of Romeo and Juliet, where Romeo comes in and sees Juliet under the influence of her poison appearing to be dead and commits suicide, and then she wakes up thinking he would be there, and she finds that he has committed suicide. That's Shakespearean tragedy, or Hamlet with the poisoned blade from Laertes, and that's what Shakespeare did with the tragedy. And it would be an ultimate irony for us to have awakened to the fact that we do have this power to control our destiny, only to have it snuffed out by what's happening at Fukushima. If ever there was a last warning, a last moment, this is, I think, certainly it. Because there is little any of us can do at the moment while Mother Nature, Mother Earth, expresses her will at Fukushima and around the world, here in Colorado and all the places that are having abnormal weather. So as I looked at this, I always went back to Motown. We're going to play one more song, and then I'm going to come back with you and sign out. And this is a feel good song, man. This was recorded in 1966 by the Four Tops with the most incredible bass player I think maybe who ever lived, James Jamerson, playing a bass track that can't be beat. And it is also my favorite dancing song of all time. And those who know me know that I can cut a rug pretty good. I dance with the off stage with the James Brown dancers, and I got some moves, and this is my favorite dancing song of all time. But this really does fit how I feel about each and every one of you as we wind up the show tonight, and I'll be back with a few notes after this song. But here are the Four Tops with a song called Reach Out, I'll Be There. Sing it to yourself, sing it to your friends, sing it to your family, tap your feet, and in spite of all this shit, feel good about it. Now, you cannot help, no matter what's going on, but to tap your toes with that music. And that's the power of music. That's the power of spirit. And I will always be grateful to Motown for singing, for seeing me through some of the darkest times ever. Now, as I hear that song, I have to be honest with you guys, as I've been here doing this with you for 3 years on the radio and 35 years. And if, after Typhoon to Tropical Storm Manyi finishes, Fukushima is somehow still teetering under some kind of control, maybe those of us who are awake enough will understand that every minute that we have after that is precious. It's a reprieve. It is a chance to do, to be, to think, to act as if there were nobody to please, as if there were nobody to impress, as if nobody was judging us. What would we do with that time that we had left? Because I am surrendered to the prospect that human life on this planet may be very close to being over very suddenly. But I will insist with my dying breath, after 35 years of this particular work, of trying to warn, to scout, to lead the way, that how we are living and what energy we are holding as those final moments approach us is maybe one of the most important things, if not the most important thing of all, for what happens as death comes to call, as we face the final mark to market, as all the lives of infinite growth suddenly find themselves in a place where they can't be held accountable by destroying everything. That was the zero-sum game that I've been writing about and talking about for a long time. But we are truly spectators tonight. And in that time, it is my hope and my love and my prayer for every one of you that you find a way to love, to be of service to others, to carry that energy, and hopefully come back here and join us next week. And I'm going to ask Guy McPherson to be on next week, because I need a reality check, and I'm sure that he and I would have a great conversation. I hope he's listening tonight. So for the meantime, I'm going to sign off here and leave you. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, and it has been a pleasure and an honor to serve you and to be your friend for all of these years, and we all did the best we could. And now we just look at each other and share a little love. I'll see you next week, I hope, and if not, I'll see you on the other side. Right.